Hey, welcome back to Matt and Dwight Just Might, a podcast about two Midwest-based comedians that are just trying to figure it out, man. Just trying to put the pieces together in their own lives and their careers, and handling whatever comes up. You know, you think you're gonna just have like an easy breezy podcast day, and then you got to bring the couch cushions in from outside because it's gonna storm and the dogs are freaking out.
This is my life, Matt. This is my life. I have two small chihuahuas and one is deaf, so it doesn't affect him. But man, the other one just feels so deeply. Any thunder, any like wind, I'm like, oh yeah, I should probably bring the patio cushions in. So getting all my steps in today.
Yeah. So that's interesting that the deaf dog doesn't seem to sense the storm coming on some other level. Like, I feel like dogs are supposed to be able to know when. Are they just hearing the storm this entire time?
It's just been, I guess you're supposed
hearing
to feel
it on its way. Yeah.
He's so old, Matt.
How old is he? All right, sorry.
I think he's like 16.
Oh, that's pretty old.
I just don't think he gives a shit.
Yeah.
Like, he used to chase squirrels in the backyard, and now he... Like, this morning, he walked out the back door. There was a squirrel in the backyard, and he just, like, froze and looked at it.
Yeah.
You see the wheels turning. Like, do I want to expend the energy to chase this damn thing down?
I feel like that's true of most dogs as they get older. They just, you know, like, after a lifetime of not catching them, you just kind of give up, right?
Yeah, just namaste.
Yeah, exactly. They're like, you know what? Maybe these squirrels aren't so bad after all, is what they tell themselves, rather than...
They come full circle. It's very zen, and he's living by Confucius tenets.
Yeah, that's what they don't tell you. Giving up is pretty much the most zen thing you can do. Like,
life is suffering.
Free your heart of all desires by just giving up, everybody. That's what this podcast is really about.
Welcome back to Giving Up with Matt and Dwight. We're doing well, man. How are you doing this day?
I'm good, man. I finally have had a little bit of a downtime. All last week was post Limestone stuff. You know, we kind of did the recap of the festival, but what I think people don't really realize is there's a lot of stuff that you still have to do. Like, I had a lot of like closing out the books and accounting and sending wire transfers for headliners and just like a lot of like little things that I had to do. So that pretty much took up most of my week last week. So this week is the first week that I've got a little bit of a like some me time. For at least a couple of days before I hit the road again. Yeah. What about you?
That's dope, man. I did no shows. Mm. It was fantastic. I had a full, relaxed week for the most part. I went to an Indians game. That was fun. The Indianapolis Indians. We got smoked. It was fun. went with Cam O'Connor, who's a comedian from Indianapolis. He won some tickets. And we got to sit in a nice little box. Perfect day. It's beautiful outside. Kicked my feet up. Didn't have to like worry about going home to pack to get on the road. So I didn't have anything. So enjoyed myself thoroughly. Several Sun King beers.
There you go. Free.
Yeah, it was dope.
Yeah, well, that's awesome. Yeah, and I don't know. Like, how you were doing shows right up until Limestone, which I know we talked about on previous episodes, was a bit of a mixed. It was a little bit of a. I don't want to say it was a mixed blessing, but maybe a misstep. Or
It definitely tested my stamina, physically and mentally, spiritually, emotionally. Thank God, like, this is, I'm going to shout out my wife because she's so supportive in this thing. Like, so stressed out for the 2 weeks leading up to Limestone and then just being on the road constantly, feeling like, you know, you live out of your suitcase. So I'd bring my suitcase in from when I'd get home like on Sunday or Monday. And then I wouldn't even like put it away. I would just, I didn't use these clothes. So I got to go out on Wednesday or Thursday again. Mm-hmm. So I just like lived out of my suitcase for like a month and a half leading up to the festival and probably won't do that again.
Yeah.
Probably won't do that again.
Yeah.
Save some energy.
So it was a well-deserved weekend off. And the reason that I brought that up is because you and I have talked many times about, you know, it is important to take those breaks, but then also too long of a break is not good for anybody's mental health. I think because I had so much Limestone stuff to work on, I haven't fallen into like the sort of like the weird depression stuff that happens when I'm off the road for a long time. Cause yeah. I had things that were keeping me busy and it was comedy related, you know, and it wasn't just a lot of downtime for my brain to just spin, you know?
Yeah.
But I am doing shows this weekend for I think it's like the first time in like a month that I had Ooh. To think about my own jokes and my own stuff. And I was like, oh yeah, I need to look at this set list again. And like, what? And then there's a couple of them like, what was that? What joke was that?
Yeah. Like you like go back and listen because
yeah.
A couple of things happen. You lose the rhythm or momentum of it because you haven't been doing it. I know a month doesn't seem that long, but in stand up, it is pretty much an eternity because your brain is so used to like these habits or what you're working on. Like before you took the break, like when I take a long break, I really struggle with like, forgetting tags that I was working on or why did I think this tag worked? So it's like restarting the car, jump starting the engine a little bit. So
yeah,
where are you at?
So I'm going to be at Springfield, Missouri. Last episode, we were like, oh, I should follow up on that. And you were right that I should have follow up on that.
My
headlining Thursday and featuring Friday, Saturday is now featuring Friday and Saturday and headlining Sunday, which is a Father's Day. They're going to do a Father's Day show and everything, and it's going to be cool. And it's good and it's fine. It doesn't matter to me which end of it it's on. Honestly, it's almost better because I am going to be a little rusty because there is no open mic in Bloomington this week because it's the beginning of the contest.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm not really going to have a chance to kind of like even get the cobwebs dusted off before I hit stage out there. So doing it during a feature set is going to be a lot easier than trying to come out and do, you know, 50 minutes to an hour.
Right.
So I have a couple of warm-ups in the feature spot, which is actually good. It worked out to my advantage. So, but he did 100% forget that he was going to have me headline on that Thursday.
And there are certain club owners and bookers that you know that you're going to have to follow up with.
Yeah.
They're like, come. We'd love to have you again. And it's like, it's not like your first time there. He knows you.
Yeah. And it's not even like it was just a vague open invitation. It was a conversation we had. I'd reached out because the Friday, Saturday headliner is Harlan Williams, who I've always liked. And I've never even gotten a chance to see live, let alone work with. And so I specifically said, can I come feature this weekend? Because I'd like to work with him. And they were like, yeah. And then I was like, I see if he's not doing Thursday, can I headline? Yeah. And so he had remembered the Friday, Saturday thing. Luckily, he had not like double booked the feature spot, but he had completely spaced that Thursday thing and gave it to someone else who's routing through. But here's the interesting thing. So that Thursday show with a different headliner who's passing through and also my Sunday show, the way they're advertising them on their website, it's not under our headliner names. Do you want to take a wild guess of how they're marketing this?
Father's Day weekend extravaganza mail review.
Oh yes, that's what. Come and get these daddies.
No, I can't be that far off.
No, you're super far off because there's no reason why you would guess this ever. And this is a tactic that the club owner has already done, I think, one time before to huge success. Both that Thursday and that Sunday that I'm headlining, it's not advertising who's performing. Instead, what they're advertising is, if you come to this show, you'll be entered into a raffle to win Matt Rife tickets. Yeah.
Oh, God.
How's that for the ego? How's that for the ego, huh?
It hurts us.
But
so your audience...
Mm-hmm. The people are going to be just people who want to see Matt Rife and who are going to sit through, you know, begrudgingly at best and aggressively angry at worst. You're going to have to sit through another comedy show just to win the chance at winning tickets to see Matt Rife.
This is brilliant marketing with no regard for your own mental well-being.
He gave me an out. He said, do you want to still do it? And he's like, the last one we did, we were able to pay the headliner really, really well from this. And I was like, yes, I would like to make more money since I'm going all the way out there, staying an extra day. You know, like, yes, I'll go ahead and do it. And also I was just like, it's so brazen.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, Let's do
go
it.
Go for it. I think that's how I'm going to market all of my shows going forward.
Well, here's the thing is you actually have to have Matt Rife tickets to give away, I think, is the key. You know?
Nope. You just fine print it for a chance at winning. Yeah. Oh, my God. Matt, I'm not going to say the exact opposite of Matt Rife in every way possible.
No, I'm just what Matt Rife will look like if he continues to do stand-up for 15 years.
He's already got 2 years of book dates, so
yeah, exactly. He's gonna start looking rough, you know.
Yeah, this is hilarious. The Matt Rife take over the phenomenon.
Can you remember the last time there has been something like this? Because there's been huge, like, you know, Kevin Hart, biggest comedian in the world for a while. Dave Chappelle, arguably the biggest comedian in the world for a while. Louis C.K. for a while. It almost feels like when Louis blew up after that one Tonight Show appearance. He did that one Tonight Show appearance.
Yeah.
Where he's on the couch. And then like that, he blows up, right?
Right.
Except Louis had been doing comedy for 20 plus years.
For a long time. Yeah, so had Kevin. So Kevin Hart.
Yeah. Kevin Hart had been doing it since he was a teenager, you know. So yeah, just out of the blue, like maybe, I mean, I don't know. Bo Burnham, I guess, would probably be the best.
Yeah.
Example of this, like from 0 to 1,000,
right?
You know,
this is
crazy.
It's like what was funny to me on social media or that comedians had so many opinions because Matt Rife released the tour poster and it's got 2 years worth of dates, just cities, and he's got his shirt off and he's looking real seductively at the camera. And even me, like, I don't care about this. Even me, I was like, put your goddamn shirt on. And then I just went on with my life. But a lot of people were pissed.
Yeah.
Like, why is this guy getting to sell out arenas just because he's hot and women think he's funny? I was like, that's it. All
that's
you need.
The two reasons. You just said it. Yeah. And he's got millions of followers. Yeah. Yeah. Well, he's just a very top tier, high level version of a thing that we've talked about on the podcast before, which is the incredibly in shape comedian who finds an excuse to show his abs during a set, during some kind of act out. He has to take a shirt off. The joke just wouldn't work if I didn't take my shirt off.
Yeah.
He's just taking that, you know, to the next level, you know.
It's outrageous. It's so funny, like, that I've been forced to care about this because, like, we've talked about, like, this doesn't take anything away from me.
I was going to get Madison Square Garden that weekend. And he took my weekend at Madison Square Garden.
If anything, he got you a headlining date on a Sunday.
Exactly.
Yeah, this dude is creating jobs. I'd be like, hey, come see the Matt Riff show. Matt Riff, because not everybody can read real well.
And that's true.
You walk on stage, and then there's like, I don't know, 222-year-old Fuckboy Island fans. And then
is he from Fuckboy Island? Is that where he got his start?
I think so.
Oh, okay.
And he started like posting a bunch of clips. Like, I can't get on TikTok or Instagram without seeing like it's suggesting a Matt Rife clip. Our YouTube is huge. So I don't know his comedy. Have you ever watched anything from him?
No, his special on YouTube got recommended to me today for the very first time because I was still in incognito because I have Brave and I have Chrome and stuff like that. Yeah. And one of them, Chrome, is the one that YouTube login on Chrome is the one that I would do to preview the submissions to Limestone.
Ah, yeah.
And so, because I don't want to obliterate my,
right,
like my algorithm, right? Yeah. So it's like signed out. It's signed out. It's not incognito. It's just a signed out YouTube thing. And so it's the first time I did it on Chrome today because Brave was having some issues. And I went to YouTube and it showed up there. It doesn't show up on my personal one because my personal YouTube algorithm has almost no comedy on it. It's like, here's some middle-aged white dude playing guitar. Just like it's you. It's like, here's some like guitar lesson from a guy that looks just like you, you know? You know, there's that stuff. And then there's like all these like deep dives and like, what did it really mean in this Marvel movie? You know, like those kind of like things. Yeah. Like, so there's almost no comedy on my personal YouTube feed. So I didn't know he was awesome dominant there. And then it's like, it was boom. Like everybody else in the world is watching this. You want to watch this clip? And I'm like, no, I don't know. I'm sure, you know, I've talked to people who've opened for him. And they're like, it's fine.
Yeah.
He's a comedian, has jokes. It's fine. It is just really bizarre though. Cause I don't think we've seen anything like this phenomenon.
It's wild. I think from what I've heard is that he, you know, he's famous from posting clips of his crowd work that people really like, but he also is working on actual material.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when you're doing that and you like, you have all these dates, if you surround yourself with actual comics or good people, you will get to that point where your material is strong enough to carry a set than rather just like going through crowd work. Cause he's doing theaters.
Yeah.
His crowd work's not going to work in theaters.
Well, we just saw an example of that. Someone trying to do crowd work at the theater like last weekend or 2 weekends ago, whenever that was now.
Yep.
And it just doesn't work correctly.
Right.
Like, unless you were literally just doing it with the person in the very front row.
Yep.
But even then, the theater is such a big space. Unless the person you're talking to is yelling their answers back to you, everyone else in the theater is like, we don't know what they said. We didn't hear them. Like, yep. So it's, yeah, it's something. I don't want to spend the whole episode talking about Matt Rife, but yeah, I did Matt Rife's world, baby. I didn't know you would get a kick out of that that billing that I'm going to be closing out the raffle show. I'm not headlining. I'm just doing some time. Doing some time while they calculate the raffle winner or something. I don't know.
Do you get to, will they bring the bucket to you on stage and
no
you get
idea.
To pick the winner?
I have
no idea.
To
read the serial numbers on the tickets? Or?
Yeah, I hope maybe. Yeah. God, I hope so. Right. Wouldn't that be just the honor of honors?
Oh, man.
Yeah. Now I need to start every $100 of merch that you buy from me, you get one more entry into the raffle.
I guarantee you that would work.
Yeah. I should talk to Chris, the club owner, like, hey, if you're doing this, can I also do this?
Can I steal this idea?
Can you give me a pair of tickets? Can you give me two tickets to give away from the merch table?
My God.
What's crazy is Matt Rife is still playing the club. He's still playing the Blue Room Comedy Club. And I think the thing is like he reached out like 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And they're like, yep, the first availability we have is like in 2023. And he's since blown up, and I'm surprised his agent hasn't pulled him. But the Blue Room is a pretty big room. It's a decent size room. If you did like a week there of shows, if you did five shows in there, you'd be doing a theater twice over, probably.
Right.
You know.
Right.
So
the numbers make sense.
The numbers.
I think anywhere he goes, if you do five shows, the numbers make sense.
Yeah.
Because he's probably special engagements.
Yeah. So
you know,
$45 ticket.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. So.
Yeah.
Okay. But Matt Rife world, Matt Rife. Jesus Christ. I'm so excited for you and horrified. I cannot wait for next week. I just want to know the demographics of the audience.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see if it's going to be all like, I don't know. Because I mean,
you're still in Missouri.
You're still in the home of the Bass Pro Shop. Mm-hmm. You know, that's where it's located. You know, it is Father's Day. So some would assume that there'll be young females who want to see Matt Rife who are taking their dad to this show as a Father's Day gift, making the dad pay for it, of course.
Yeah.
And then hoping that they win tickets for Matt Rife that they can then take their friend with to instead. Yeah. That's my guess anyway. But we'll find out next week. I'll give you guys a lowdown on that. What do you have coming up? And then we'll do a little bit of a recap of your Detroit weekend we never got to because of limestone stuff. So where are you at this weekend, Dwight?
I am home this weekend. I have my show at Gookman House in Indianapolis, Thursday, June 15th, 7:30. Got a pretty fun lineup. So go get tickets. It's at BrewTube Comedy on Instagram or on Eventbrite. Just type in BrewTube Comedy. They'll come up. If you're in Indianapolis, please come to the show. And then I'm going to Wisconsin for... some family time, some nice. Megan's family time, good old Wisco. So another light week, but I host that Gookman House show. So I'm working on some new stuff. I think I'm just going to do it all up top, do like 10 minutes of new stuff on top. It's going to go terribly. I'll do a joke that works and then start the show.
As long as you end on something.
I got to end on you. It's still my show.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm gonna work on this stuff because I don't have a lot of spots in the next two weeks. And so before things ramp back up in July. So I think every spot that I have this month will be just focused on saying the stuff out loud a bunch.
Yeah. Yeah. That's important. Don't do the thing though. I don't know if I talked about this on the podcast or not, but a while ago I did see a host, just could not get him. Couldn't get him. And they didn't go long. They didn't stay up there forever. They went and took the L and got off stage. But then what they did is they did try to do time in between the it was an open, it was like a showcase style mic. And so they did time between each comic. You could clear as clearly trying to be like, well, now that you laughed a little bit, you laugh at my shit. Like they were, and it was like, I understand like the need to like put that bandage on your ego, but
yeah,
like you don't do that, man. You just take the L. Like
just take the L.
Don't mess up the rest of the show.
I love that attitude of like, this ain't over. I will be back.
Oh man,
this is not concluded.
So I know that you wanted to talk about the Detroit. It's a big thing. We kind of made a pact when we started the podcast that we were going to stop texting each other about how our shows were going, like, which is really the genesis of this. We would kind of like always like, you know, over text or catch up, you know, like, how was your show? Or we'd be in the middle of a weekend that was going poorly or great or whatever, just little updates to each other. We stopped doing that. Now, there have been a few exceptions. I texted you, I think, from Little Rock, I think, maybe.
Yeah.
And you texted me during your Detroit weekend. I was like, oh, this is a bad sign.
Oh, boy.
I can't wait to the podcast. But because of all the limestone stuff, we haven't had a chance to hear about it. So this has been simmering. You've got a little bit of distance, some clarity now. walk us through this Detroit weekend and why it was so memorable. Is that the best way to put it?
Memorable is nice. Okay. So let's go on a journey. So I'm at the Detroit House of Comedy. I've never been there. I've been trying to get in this club since it opened. Mm-hmm. Basically, it's right downtown Detroit. It's Memorial Day weekend. It's beautiful. I'm walking around. On Thursday, so I'm doing Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. On Thursday, I'm opening for Martin Amini, who is another guy that blew up in the pandemic by like posting crowd work clips and like very in-depth crowd work clips. Like he's got two cameras set up, one to the audience. He's got someone running around with a camera. Oh, it's in-depth, dude.
Yeah.
And he's like a mix of like four ethnicities. So he just goes at all these different ethnicities. And it was the most diverse room I've been in like several years. There's like two white people. There's a lot of Indian people. There's a lot of Hispanic people. It's beautiful. It's awesome. It's awesome. Yeah. This dude is huge. I looked him up. He's got like several hundred thousands of followers. A lot of engagement on his Instagram, and he sells out the room.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a thing that we've talked about a lot. It's like when you're opening up for a quote unquote famous person or internet famous person or someone else's audience, they don't know why you're on stage.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know what you're doing.
Yeah, they think it's just going to be just the famous person. Like,
yeah,
the show's going to start, the famous person's going to walk out, and it's going to go.
Yep, and that's not what happened. They had to sit through two comedians, and what's funny is that I was talking to Martin in the green room before the show. Super cool dude, but he's also experiencing the people coming to the show, and they want the crowd work. That's what they want. They want to get made fun of. They want to sit up front. They want that fucking eye contact. They're masochists, basically. Like, and he's like, I'm actually working on a lot of heavier material about my upbringing and like COVID and like people get so impatient. Like, talk about my shoes.
Yeah.
So he's like very aware of this. Mm-hmm. And he's trying to figure out how to structure his set. So like maybe open with crowd work so that you give them a little taste and then get into jokes and then give them a little taste in the middle and then like continue the set that way.
Yeah.
So I was really interested to watch his set. So he comes out. So my set, holy shit, were they not there for it? And it's the thing where it's just like blank stares, but like mildly entertained.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, I knew this was going to happen. I hang in the pocket. I do my time. Thank you. A lot of people come out after the show and go, that was great. And I was like, fuck you and your mother. Let me know in the room, you son of a... Anyway, but Martin goes on stage and it's just riotous from like the jump. It's just crazy. And I'm watching, he goes into his crowd work. He's, it's just, who's the comic? Like, I'm blanking. It's like the Russell Peters.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, he's like, okay, I'm going to make fun of all these different ethnicities and like got a little inside joke for all of them. Right. And the crowd's loving it. And then he tries to go into his material. And this woman up front just keeps, she's still in the like, come on, keep going with the crowd work and shit like that. And House of Comedy is a big stage. It's really, it's almost like a theater stage. The room is set up nice. It's kind of like a, it's kind of like a black box theater where the seats crescendo up. And so he's on the left side of the stage. This lady's on the right, up front, just like still having a conversation. It's like, and Mexicans, we also eat more than rice and beans. It's not just rice and beans. He's like, I've moved on.
Yeah.
He shuts her down and he goes back to trying to get into material. And she goes again. She's like, yeah, I was just saying, like, I don't know. And then so security comes down and they're like, hey, it's, can you shut the fuck up? And so she sits there with her arms crossed and pouts like a child that got in trouble, just like instant tantrum. And then the crowd's just kind of uneasy because she's up front. You can't help but see her.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so Martin goes into like a second batch of crowd work. And then she gets going again. She gets ramped up again. Security comes down, asks her to quiet down again. She kind of does, but then she just keeps talking to the point where security has to come and ask her to leave.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you've ever seen someone get kicked out of a comedy club, but the first interaction, the first like, the first feeling they have is confusion. Where the rest of the audience is like, thank God, finally.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
They don't know why it's happening. I was just being part of the show. I was just helping. I was just like,
just helping. Yeah. They're all, they're just helpers. They're just helpers.
So they, it takes like three security people to come and like get this lady. She leaves quietly. Her friend goes out to like check on her. Show keeps going. About 10 minutes later, from the lobby, we can just hear this woman yelling, like, obscenities. Like, this is bullshit. This is racism. She said racism in a room. Like, everybody in the room's a minority.
Yeah.
But she got, so you can just hear shouting for, like, the next 5 minutes. Kyle Forsyth, who's a fantastic comedian and a manager there, goes out and, like, tries to ease it over. He comes back in the room and we're kind of like joking about it by the sound booth. It's like, that's fucking crazy, man. She's gonna fucking kill you. And then like 5 minutes later, she gets back in the room and starts yelling, where the fuck is Kyle? Where the fuck is Kyle? I'm gonna fuck him up. I'm gonna, she points at
she says that she's gonna fuck him up.
Yes. She points at like, this is my favorite moment. She points at a black woman working the door. It's like older black woman. She said, I'm gonna fuck you up. And the black woman goes, you don't fucking know me. As the show's going on.
And is like, is he still going or is he stopping when all this
everybody's
shit
just stopped? Like, yeah. Cause this whole interaction is like 20 seconds.
Yeah.
So, you know, not a long time, but long enough to be like, holy shit. So he addresses it. The crowd like claps and cheers. And I'm like, what the fuck? Like, people say Detroit's changing, but is it?
Welcome to Detroit.
Welcome to Detroit. And I'm like, so part of me is like, you know, you create your own monster.
Yeah.
Like you, and you're aware of it. Like this stuff probably happens a lot to him because I think a lot of people that come to these like social media stars are these people with like large followings on social media. I think it's their first time at a comedy show ever.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. No, definitely. Like they don't know how to act. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's like, it is, it's, I think you're right. I think that some of these people are creating their own problems, obviously, which they can soothe with the piles of money that they're making, you know? Yeah. Mm. Yeah, it's like
he did drop how much he is making now.
Just casually dropped that. Yeah,
just as like an easy applause break.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Like, oh, good on stage. Okay, yeah. But here's the thing is like I do wonder. Do you think we'll get to the rest of your, because that's only night one of your Detroit Odyssey, and I feel like it's still not even done. Like, did the woman fuck people up? Did she stick around?
She did not fuck people up. You guys. She did. So she came. So we were selling merch. You sell merch in the lobby.
Uh-huh.
And so her friend had to come back and she just looked so defeated and she apologized for her friend. Mm-hmm. And I think she bought a t-shirt and she was just like so sorry and just, oh, it was terrible. I felt so bad for her. She's like this. She's like, we thought one thing and. She doesn't understand. She thought she got called out, but we got her home. But her friend had to come get her purse, her phone. She left all that shit. So,
oh man,
wild.
Well, here's the thing: is like, do you think the crowd work trend is going to go away, and people are going to get tired of it, and they're going to start gravitating more? What's going to become popular again is like really well crafted hours, and there's definitely still an audience for that, right? Like you look at like. You know, Mulaney had a big comeback with this special, which is I haven't watched, but I'm assuming has zero crowd work because it's Mulaney and he doesn't do crowd work.
Right.
You know, do you think that this trend is going to stay for a while, or do you think it's going to eventually peter out and the social media masses are going to move on to something new?
So my thoughts on this are that the comics that I've interacted with that have crowd work blow up, it's not the core tenet of their set. So they are trying to construct hours of material. And I think that automatically trumps anything. Like if you're trying to sell an hour of material to Netflix or Apple or any of these things, I think that's the ultimate goal. Working this stuff out on the road is always going to be a combat sport. So like in the way the internet changes so quickly, like it's so hard not to see how anything that we do isn't just a fad. You know what I mean?
Yeah, which kind of gets to the deeper point that I wanted to make. There's someone told me this, and I think they attributed it to Conan O'Brien, where they said, if you just stay in your lane and focus on what you do well, even if it's not popular at the time, you'll have your moment and you'll find your fan base eventually. And the way that he talked about it was that, and you may have even been the person who told me this, but it's like someone in an orchestra and they play the triangle. Mm-hmm. At first, you don't notice the triangle because there's, you know, all the horn section and the percussion and stuff like that. But then the longer you're listening to the symphony, you're like, oh yeah, there's a triangle right there.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, the triangle's doing something cool, you know? Yep. And so then you become a triangle guy.
Yeah.
You know? So now you're like, yeah. You know, I think I really like the triangle. That's my favorite part, you know?
Yeah.
So I do think about this because comics are so quick to chase trends.
Yeah.
Particularly on social media. Mm-hmm. You know, like what's the thing that's gonna, you know, and again, you can't blame anybody because some people are having careers made.
Right.
By having a couple of clips go viral and being able to capitalize on it quickly. So you can't really blame anybody about that. But I do wonder if it's not a stronger long-term strategy to really just focus on your strengths. Because there are people that are doing crowd work that aren't great at it.
Right.
You know, and they're posting, or worse, like they're posting bad crowd work.
Yeah.
Like that's the thing is like people posting crowd work clips where they're not getting any laughs and it's not very clever.
Right.
But they're just doing it because that's what the algorithm wants. I think in the end is going to like bite them in the ass, you know?
It's going to die out.
Yeah.
Well, it's, you know, anything that a club can do to keep the lights on, they should do. And if this is the way you sell tickets, I think getting people in the room with you is very important. We always talk about like the outliers in the audience. Like the crowd wasn't extremely rowdy. They were there for a show and they laugh at his jokes. We always talk about like the one or two people that get kicked out and are disruptive. But I think generally the people that come to a comedy club are expecting a show of some sort, like not just an hour of crowd work or an hour and a half of crowd work. Mm-hmm. I, when I'm opening for someone like that, like I really ease off of doing crowd work because mm-hmm. it just gets tired. It gets tiring. Like it would have been so easy for me to just like, all right, I know this audience likes crowd work. So I'm going to, that's how I'm going to set up all my jokes. I'm just going to dip into the audience and make fun of somebody, get into a joke. But I didn't do that because I don't feel like that's what the headliner wanted. And I also don't sure. feel like that's a good representation of what I do. Mm-hmm. Like I said, a lot of people did come up and said, you know, great job. That was so funny. So they do have an appreciation for actual jokes, just maybe not in the room. Maybe they're not comfortable showing it yet because there's so many young people that have never laughed in front of another person before.
Yeah, we've talked about this before on the podcast, where if the only way that you've experienced stand-up comedy is through your TikTok or social media through your phone, you don't know how to be an audience member. Mm-hmm. Like, you just don't know. So it's going to take them a few tries before they get the hang of it, for sure. Yeah. So that was night one.
Night one. Detroit.
Take us now to the second night of your Detroit odyssey.
Oh, man. So I'm opening for Kieran Dole, who is a comic from LA. Sweet, so sweet, but did not sell any tickets. Like I said, it's Memorial Day weekend. Mm-hmm. The Tigers were playing every night next to the club. And so like you just, and there was like D. Ray Davis, who's huge. He was at the theater that night. And I walk in on Friday and there was an altercation in the lobby. Like this guy is yelling at Kyle, the manager of the club, because he can't get into the club. Apparently this guy messaged Kieran, the headliner, asking to be on the show, get a guest set. Okay. And she said, sure, come on by. He got to the club and apparently he had been banned. He'd been banned from the club. He's banned from a lot of different clubs in Detroit and in Michigan because he has been accused of sexual assault.
Okay.
And so Kyle, who's like, I don't know, 5'9". Mm-hmm. This guy's like 6'4". And he got like a great staff at the Detroit House of Comedy. It sits next to a Red Wings bar. And so like, as he's like making the most theatrical exit I've ever seen, like it's almost rehearsed. he's like, you do this because you just don't like me. And he has like all these bullet points. He's like, I know what this is about. This is bullshit. He goes, you're done in this town. I was like, you don't say that unless you yeah. wrote it down on your way over here. Like yeah. you knew that you were going to get kicked out. So he tried to do this real shady thing where he was like, I'm just going to ask the headliner.
Yeah, of course. He went around the club straight to the headliner who he didn't know.
He did not know.
Yep. Yeah. Yep.
And and I'm like, what the is it me? I'm yeah. like, are there fights typically? Like everyone wants to kill Kyle. There's probably a hit out on him.
And he's so nice.
He's so nice. He's yeah. the sweetest dude. So that guy like makes Martin Scorsese, Al Pacino type exit. Uh-huh. Like he's Scarface. He has like his friends like hold him back. Like I'm gonna fight you, but like only because yeah. my friends are you lucky to hold me back. Hold me back though. Hold me back. Don't let me go. I was like, this is fucking wild, dude.
It's and then- two nights in a row, physical violence is threatened.
Yeah,
against the manager of the club.
It's so weird. Put me in such a different headspace. I think for Friday night, we had just like the front row
mm-hmm.
filled and a couple of seats. So probably like 20 people. I had so much fun. That's it. So much more fun than the sold out crowd.
Yeah.
These people came to a comedy show. I got to do actual jokes and just kind of sit in the pocket. I did 20 minutes that night and 20 minutes the next night. And then no altercation on Saturday.
Oh, okay. They got it all out of the system.
Yeah. I was looking for it. I was just hanging out in the lobby. I was like, it's going to happen. it's going to happen. But yeah, good sets on Friday and Saturday. Thursday, we had the most, more than both of those nights combined. Hated that set. So, and then it was, oh yeah, D-Ray Davis was on Saturday night. Mm-hmm. So at the theater, it's like D-Ray Davis and friends. And I walk out, I left after my set so I could just drive home at night.
Mm-hmm.
Left after my set, it's so wild to see. I come out of a show, a stand-up comedy show, with just performed in front of like 14 people.
Mm-hmm.
Walk outside where D-Ray Davis is performing. There are cars for blocks. There are people like just lined up outside of the theater. There's attendants everywhere. There's like police. I'm like, this is fucking crazy. Yeah. So you're saying it is possible to market yourself in a way where you can have this. I've always seen that, and I was like, I don't know if I want that. Those problems, you know what I mean? Mm. I'm sure that would be fun and financially.
Well, the thing is, it's not your problems anymore. You have enough money, you pay for it to be the attendance problems,
somebody
the,
else's,
the off duty, yeah, the off duty police problems, and the theater's problems. It's not your problems, really. Like that logistical stuff. Like D-Ray was not that out there, sense. Like, you know, yeah, like helping people get park their cars or anything. You know?
Yeah, his problem is, how do I spend all this bread? Exactly.
Yeah, man. Well, it's like, it sounds like, you know, just a typical stand-up weekend.
It's just a normal weekend in Detroit.
Let's talk about this real quick, because we kind of brushed up against it, but we moved on. Let's talk about the correct way to ask for a guest spot, because it is not messaging the headliner who you've never met before and asking. And we've known people that have done that before too. Like there was someone in our scene years ago who was sort of known for that, who was a solid comic and was good and was not banned for sexual assault, you know, was in with clubs, but he just preferred to, like, he would do that. He would just message the comics directly and ask for spots or even ask to feature for them or whatever. That is not the correct way to do it.
Nope.
You always go through the club.
Yeah.
Especially if you ever want to work at that fucking club again, because they don't like it. They resent it.
Yep.
When they have a system set up. And so the way that I have always done it, you know, if like there's somebody coming to the attic who I really like, you know, or whatever, and I'm not on that weekend as a feature, if I'm working on like material or whatever, go to the club first.
Mm-hmm.
Can I do a guest spot on this night or the entire weekend if it's my home club, you know, like, cause I'm trying to get tape or I'm working on something specific for something, or I just like that comic. And then if the club says that they don't care, then they take it to the headliner and ask. You don't go to the headliner. They take it to the headliner and ask if the headliner is okay with it.
Yeah.
And then they report back to you. Yes or no, you can do your guest spot.
Right.
It's never. Yeah. You never cut the club completely out of the situation, because it's just the worst possible look.
It's easy. It's so easy. Like it's like this goes back to just being present and being around. And like, I would be so uncomfortable if I just showed up without the club's permission and got on stage. Like it's such a weird thing to do to the club. Like you said, if you want to work that club, you're going to have communication with the club owner, the person that books the shows, like the GM. You're going to have this relationship. Your goal should not be to get guest spots. It should be to get booked by the club for full length weekends. And if you go around the club, then it makes you look like a shady person.
Yeah.
Maybe definitely. You just don't know any better, but like it still makes you look bad.
It looks bad. And then, you know, and there's also examples that we've known where, like, you know, there was sort of like infamously, you know, because first of all, like, would you say her name was Kieran? She said yes, because most comics are going to say yes because they want to support upcoming comics. And I'm like, yeah, I don't care. You can do a guest spot. They're also thinking probably I'm sure this has already been run by the club.
Yeah.
You know, if you're asking me, you must be a regular at the club or something like that. But there was somebody at, you know, a club in Indianapolis that they basically just made their, I don't know if they made their way backstage or they caught the headliner the first night in the bar area and drunkenly like asked them for a guest spot, and the headliner of course being like, oh sure, yeah, you're a comic, you can do a guest spot tomorrow night, that's fine. Didn't tell the club, showed up the next day to do the guest spot, bombed, like was terrible, was a terrible fit for the show, you know, and seriously pissed off the GM of that club.
Yeah.
Because they went around them, you know, and it, not only did they go around, they went around them in their own house. They did it in the club the night before. They showed up the night before and did it. And so, yeah, it's just, man, it's not a good look for sure. That's not how you do it.
Yeah. Also, don't rape. Don't do anything this guy did.
Yeah.
Don't follow in this man's footsteps.
Okay.
Don't threaten the club owner.
Don't threaten the booker. Don't rape people.
Yeah.
Now, if you were to put those this like on a 1 to 3 on what's the most important thing not to do, what would you put?
Oh, for a ranking.
Yeah.
It depends on who you're working with, what city you're in.
Okay, so you're saying there is some flexibility that rape may not be. Don't rape may not be number one.
I'm not saying that.
You're
the
willing
comedy industry saying that.
Oh, okay, got you. Okay,
now Leah's out here anyway. full calendar. Please don't rape.
Yeah. Hey, we do have a couple of questions came in after we asked a couple weeks in a row online, let people know that we were looking for questions. We've gotten a handful have already been turned in, so we will be working on those over the next couple of episodes. We've got one here. It's a multi-parter, of course. And so we're going to give this one a spin, and this will probably help me wrap up this episode of the podcast. Does that sound good?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
I'm down.
All right. This comes to the email account. And once again, that email account is mattanddwight@gmail.com. That is mattanddwight@gmail.com. That's where you can send your questions if you want. This comes from comedian Jonathan Handcuff here in Bloomington, who's asked a question before. So thank you, John, for stepping up and coming up with a new question for us, because we were desperate. We're like, oh, somebody ask us some questions. His question is, what is the one piece of stand-up advice you've gotten that you wish you'd known before your first time on stage? And he has a second part, but let's tackle this one first. What's the one piece of advice you wish that you would have gotten, Dwight?
One piece. Wow. Boil it down to one. I would say have fun, and it's not that big of a deal what happens in either if it goes well or if it goes terribly. Like, my first time on stage was okay, but I put so much pressure on myself, and that's totally normal. It's your first time on stage, but like, put so much pressure on myself to have like every word be perfect, mm-hmm. and everything. And that carried over to like my first year, where I was like, I could not have fun unless I had built it into the set. It's like, oh, I can kind of like giggle at this line. And then it's like, mm-hmm. get back to the rigid thing that I wrote down word for word specifically. So that's, you know, that's, I wish I was a little bit more loose. I wish somebody would have said, hey, just like relax, be loose. A comic that when I was hosting, at Crackers, a comic who I do not enjoy, but gave me some good advice. He's like, just be the guy you were that all your high school friends liked hanging out with. Don't be so like rigid up there. And that just like snapped and clicked to me. Like, oh yeah, I can talk to these people like friends and family. It's like relaying a story. So that was really instrumental. I wish I had heard that sooner.
Well, that's also great to the fact that you can sometimes get those kernels of wisdom from people that aren't particularly your favorite comic, or maybe you don't care for their aesthetic. You never know, mm-hmm. like the pearls of wisdom sometimes come from people that are otherwise full of shit, or that you don't relate. You're like, oh, well, that one was a home run, you know?
Yeah.
Everything else was a strike, but that was a home run. That's really great advice, I think. And, you know, unless you were doing a very specific sort of like, you know, Stephen Wright style comic, you know, mm-hmm. most of us are conversational, and really knowing to focus on that, you know, it is a conversation, and it can be flowing, I think, is great. A piece of advice I wish I would have gotten before my first time on stage is get some abs, and then
and then make go
that,
on stage.
And then make that most of your, you know, your marketing.
It works. Or go the other way. It's like, do you want abs or you want burp?
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
yeah.
My man's got a movie out.
Yeah.
Really, just take off your shirt.
Take off your shirt. I wish somebody would have told me that. You know, I don't know if I would have been able to receive this, because so much of it was based on nerves, but not all entirely. But I wish somebody would have told me, like, don't curse. If you're going to curse, curse on purpose.
Yeah.
Don't be dropping the F-bomb constantly, which a lot of it was out of nerves, but there was also, I was writing that way a little bit too, you know, like, I would have gotten a lot better a lot quicker had I not been leaning on that. And I'm not saying that everyone should wear clean. I'm just saying that it's a tool. Cursing is a tool. Swear words are a tool.
Yeah.
And when you're just like, you know, it's like when you're using the nail gun where it's supposed to go is great. If you're just spraying the nail gun all over the construction site, it's not good, you know, for anybody. So the second part of his question, the keeping in the tradition of getting multi-part questions. This is a very good question, by the way. John, both of these are great, but this second one particularly is one that I don't think I've heard a lot of other people talk about. What is the one piece of advice you did get early on in your stand-up career that you wished you had ignored? What was some bad advice that you got that held you back?
Some bad advice? Okay. Someone told me I need, if I'm going to like try to feature, that I need like an EPK, an electronic press kit, and I need a headshot, and I need this presence. This was like, this before the internet even was what it is today, where like Instagram wasn't even out. Mm-hmm. This is like, okay, your main goal is to get booked. And I really treated my career that way very early on, to where I burnt out and quit for a little while, because I had like 10 minutes of jokes, maybe 15 minutes of jokes. And then I just stopped because I put all my effort into getting booked, when in that time period, I really should have been focusing on the jokes and like having fun with just being on stage and learning how to be on stage and growing my own voice. And I didn't. And I really regretted that, because I lived in Chicago when I quit. Mm-hmm. I was like, I'm done with this. It's like, I got headshots. I got my professional shot. I got my blazer on. I got my jeans and I got my dress shoes. And I'm up against a brick wall. I'm a comedian.
Yeah.
Why aren't you booking me? Here's a clip where I say fuck 187 times as well. But yeah, I really wish that I didn't focus on the business aspect so much at the beginning.
I think that's very valuable, because, you know, there's a thing that we always overhear in a green room or in the clubs that have like a front area bar. Like this definitely happened when last time I was at Comedy Works in Denver. There's like that front, there's like the main bar area upstairs. And then there's also like a kind of a, there's like a bar area downstairs too that you can't really sit at, but there's a room right next to it you can, but there's spaces for comics to collect, right, and hang out. And not a lot of people there that night knew who I was, and so they just think I'm some rando, right? And so I'm just listening to all the chatter, and there is that thing of like, new comics love to relay things that they heard on comedy podcasts to other new comics,
right,
as if it's knowledge that they themselves have, right? Mm-hmm. Well, you know, so-and-so on Rogan said blah 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 blah.
Yeah,
you know, they're passing forth these kernels of wisdom that they heard on a podcast,
right?
And it's like, you should not really, like, I think you nailed it. Like, beginning comic, you shouldn't be thinking about the business aspect of it at all, really.
Yeah.
Beginning comic, you shouldn't really be thinking about, like, you know, finding your voice. You know, like, if you try to force that, it's terrible. You know, really, that idea of just focusing on being on stage, having fun, writing material, work, like focus on the act for a long time, and then the business stuff will start to come to you. People start asking you to do stuff, and then you're like, oh shit, I guess I need to get headshots.
Yeah,
like that's almost a better way to do it.
Yeah, when someone asks you,
right,
like, you don't need these in the folder on your computer for 2 years before someone asks you for an actual headshot.
Yeah. Yeah. And then also in that same breath, I guess what I'm trying to get to is like, opening comic, like sort of open mic level comics, new comics, there's a lot of them that will present themselves, particularly online and social media, as if they're professional, real working comics.
Yeah.
And you see this when the very popular thing of like, it's the first day of the month. Here's my little graphic that has all my dates. Here's a picture of me on stage or a funny picture of like a half eaten sandwich or whatever. Yeah. And here's all my dates. And if all of those dates are open mics, do not fucking do that. That it's just like, it's not, first of all, you shouldn't be asking people to come see you at open mics. You should be working on your shit and the stealth of darkness, you know,
Batman,
you know, unless it's a bringer mic where you have to bring people, then yes, try to get some people to come out. But when that little idea, like, cause what they're doing is they're emulating comics like at our level or above who literally are like, I'm posting this shit because I'm headlining and I got to sell tickets or they're not going to bring me back, you know? So yes, I am going to market these shows. as we know, and we're still not going to talk about yet, there's like a possible change coming up in my life where it would greatly change the way that I use social media. And that's one aspect of it. I'm like, oh, that's a big plus.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have to make that monthly graphic anymore, probably.
Yeah. That's hate the graphic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you're wasting time if you're doing that for open on July 4th. Come see me on Zoom live. We got a 40 person mic show up and go up. It's like you're wasting time.
Yeah. It's just, it's just like you're putting on the act of being at a level that you're not at yet. You know, it's like you're putting on the airs and it's just like, it's so much better. Just like focus on your jokes and your, and actually getting there rather than acting like you're there and acting like, you know, it's, I don't know. It's, and I'm, it's stuff that I'm sure I did too. So that might be, that'll be my default answer. I'm sure that Simon told me that early on in my career. You know, that you need to be focusing on social media, which I wish I would have ignored to a certain extent.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I'm trying to think of a specific piece of advice that I got early on that I feel like was damaging to me.
They say the worst vice is advice. You heard that one?
No.
The worst vice is advice. What? That was, I believe Rodney Dangerfield said that to Eddie Murphy when Eddie Murphy asked Rodney for any advice.
Ah, interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
That's good. Yeah. So I don't know. I, you know, my memory's shit. And I was trying to think of the very early days. I'm sure somebody encouraged me to be a hat guy. I was already kind of a hat guy and I didn't need to be a hat guy early on. I had the little hat.
I had the little hat.
That was my thing, you know. There's still some pictures out there on the internet, I'm sure, where I'm wearing the little hat, you know.
I love the little hat, man.
I had a little Rich Voss hat, you know. Yeah, that was me.
That's funny.
Yeah, so great questions, John. I appreciate that. I am curious if people want to send in any advice that they wish they would have had or wish they'd never heard. That would be good to hear. Also, I'd like to see some other people's takes on this. You can email us those at mattanddwight@gmail.com.
I wish Jared would have never told me to stop saying bitch so much on stage because look at Cat Williams.
You want the same sort of legal troubles as Cat Williams? I don't think that's why he's in all the legal
troubles. Yeah, I don't think so. No, because he likes to fight children.
Yeah. I mean, who doesn't? Do you really wish that Jared had not told you to say bitch so much?
No, I remember taking it so personally.
Yeah.
And it was really gentle the way he did it. It was a Facebook message. And it was like, hey, because I think I said I bombed one night at the open mic. Like, it was my Facebook status. He just messaged me. He's like, hey, you didn't bomb, but maybe stop saying, stop calling women bitches in the way that, you're doing it on stage because you don't talk like that on off stage. It's like, I know you don't call women bitches off stage. Like it's not a default that you need to like lean into.
Yeah. I think that's good advice. And I've heard him give that advice to other people too, because it is interesting. Like bitch is this sort of like gray area word in comedy. Mm-hmm. I feel like, and I've actually had a conversation with Chad Daniels about this one time. Right.
Yeah.
Because on one end of the spectrum, it's like this idea that, you know, it's just a phrase. It's just a slang, you know, and most, you know, half the time people say, you know, this bitch right here or whatever. They're not even talking about a woman, you know, they're talking about a guy. They're talking about their car, you know, that doesn't run correctly.
Yeah.
You know, ain't this a bitch, you know, like just that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But on the other end of the spectrum, there is this idea that if you do call a woman the B word, to call her a bitch in your act, in a way, you're kind of implying all women,
right,
to some extent, are right. that.
Yeah.
And so it is one of those things, too, where it's like, it's easier to take it out, too, because.
Yeah, it's like, I don't need this. It's yeah. like, I don't need to write for BET Comic View. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I really appreciated that, like, advice. But that's, you know, you get great nuggets of just hanging around the attic, not necessarily from Jared, but just like picking up on habits that great headliners have, which is why it's so important to go see live comedy.
Yeah,
and don't threaten people. Don't beat the shit out of the manager.
Don't threaten to fuck people up. You know, I do want to end on a pearl of wisdom that a headliner told another comic friend of ours. They were in the green room, and this headliner is kind of similar to the headliner that you were talking about, how you didn't really like them. You know, it was a crackers type of headliner, right? Mm-hmm. Same kind of person, like kind of like their audience is more of like a lowbrow, like lowest common denominator type of audience. And apparently they are self-aware of this, because before they walked on stage, they just said, "They're pigs, feed them slop," and then walked out on stage.
Thanks for coming to the show.
Yeah, and then probably went like, "Oh, you said thank you all so much for being here. It's just so great." But that's
hilarious.
What an amazing phrase to have, and a relationship to have with your audience, because this person is kind of a draw. Like, they're a draw in that world of, like, you know, dumb comedy. You
of
know?
Pigs. And pigs love slop.
Yep.
It's not, it's a more of a term of an endearment than it is a diss.
Yes, sure.
Mm-hmm. Here's some slop, you pig. Here's another dick joke, you hoss.
Yeah. God. So it's, instead of saying the word bitch, just call them pigs, everybody. Just call.
Amazing.
Yeah. Just unbelievable, and really going to be the new name of the podcast.
We got a lot of new names this episode.
Feed them slop. You guys are not pigs. Thank you for listening. You're the opposite of a pig. What's the opposite of a pig? A spider that can spell real good.
Yeah,
unicorn.
Maybe. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you so much for checking out the podcast. You can rate and review and do all that kind of good stuff. It's cool when you do. I haven't checked in a while, but I'm sure we've gotten thousands of reviews.
Please review for a chance to win Matt Wright tickets.